Welcome to Sweet Pillars of D&D Cast. I'm Tyler, she's Emma, he's Jesse.
And today we're going to be talking about the Warlock characters we made and the subclasses associated with them.
Let's get started! Now, first we're doing in his character, and what's your major?
So, my character name is Snez. I went with the Hexblade, so we're going to go over the Hexblade. The Hexblade is this. You made a pact with a mysterious entity from the Shadowfell, a force that manifests in a sentient magic weapon carved from the stuff of Shadow. The mighty sword Black Razor is the most notable of these weapons, which has been spread across the multiverse over the ages. I made one, a unique one for my character, but we'll go over that later. Like every other subclass of the Warlock, the Hexblade gets an expanded spell list, as the following. And you'll kind of get the point of it here in a second. At first level, you get Shield and Wrathful Smite. At second level, there's Blur and Branding Smite. Third is Blink and Elemental Weapon. Fourth is Phantasmal Killer and Staggering Smite. And fifth is Banishing Smite and Cone of Cold. So, basically, it's a bunch of smites and a bunch of defensive actions. So, kind of spells. It makes sense, because you're going to be a lot more of a martial character when you're this kind of warlock. That's kind of the idea. Hexblade's Curse. Starting at first level, you gain the ability to place a baleful curse on someone. As a bonus action, choose one creature you can see within 30 feet of you. The target is cursed for 1 minute. The curse ends early if the target dies, you die, or you are incapacitated. Until the curse ends, you gain the following benefits. You gain a bonus of damage rolls against the cursed target. The bonus equals your proficiency bonus. Any attack roll you make against the cursed target is a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20 on the d20. If the cursed target dies, you gain hit points equal to your warlock level plus your charisma modifier, a minimum of 1 hit point. And you can't use this feature again until you finish a short or long rest. So, this ability is kind of similar to like the hex spell in a way. Different.
Yeah.
The most notable thing being that you can't change your target when the cursed target dies. Like you can with Hex. You know, you can use a bonus action to move it to somebody else. But since it's different, you can use it in conjunction with the Hex spell to really curse the shit out of somebody. So, anything else?
That last ability where the target dies, you gain extra hit points. That would be great with the life changer application.
Yeah. I mean, it would work with it to make it more flavorfully work, right?
Yeah.
Then you actually are drinking some kind of life force with it, as opposed to,
just doing electric damage.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, still doesn't make it good, but, you know, it makes it more flavorful. Hex Warrior. At first level, you acquire the training necessary to effectively arm yourself for battle. You gain proficiency with medium armor, shields, and martial weapons. So basically, this really leans into the whole...
Yeah.
You become way more of a martial character at this point. The influence of your patron also allows you to mystically channel your will through a particular weapon. When you finish a long rest, you can touch one weapon that you are proficient with and that lacks the two-handed property. When you attack with that weapon, you can use your charisma modifiers to the strength or dexterity for the attack and damage rolls. This benefit lasts until you finish a long rest. If you later gain the Pact of the Blade feature, this benefit extends to every pact weapon you conjure with that feature, no matter the weapon's type. So, this basically is telling you that you should take the Pact of the Blade because it's going to get the most use out of it. And it basically lets you make a character with a heavy charisma build. You don't necessarily need to make a strength or dexterity.
Yeah.
Kind of build character.
To typically make my warlocks with your highest charisma, second dex, because that gives you more armor, gives you more evasive ability, it helps with survivability.
Yeah, and is that a weapon, just so I did my thought right? Yeah, it's just one weapon. So, they're trying to keep you from getting too overpowered, because you can't use a two-handed weapon to do that. So you can't, like, use a great sword. You can basically use a long sword. It's about the best thing. You know, what? I'm assuming it means you can't use the two-handed property of a weapon that lets you, is versatile, is the idea. If you use it two-handed.
That's the idea, but it's technically not required. You can get a long sword and then use it two-handed.
Yeah. I just don't know. I'm not sure I'm ruling on that. That'd probably be up to your DM, but I mean.
But you can still do. Oh, sorry.
No, that's what I wanted to say.
You can still dual wield if you like, say, take a, you know, like a non heavy weapon and then use your, and then you touch it with the Hex Warrior ability and make a pack weapon, and your pack weapon's a non-heavy weapon, you can dual wield.
Oh, that's true, you can get around this, because it says since you can touch your longsword, say, and then make a pack weapon of the short sword, say, in your other hand, that would also get the benefit from the charisma modifier, because it says every pack weapon you conjure, so you can use both. So, this really pushes you towards a two-weapon fighting style.
Yeah.
To a certain degree. Not completely, but it certainly makes that a little bit better. The next ability is called Accursed Specter. Starting at 6th level, you can curse the soul of a person you slay, temporarily binding it to your service. When you slay a humanoid, you can cause its spirit to rise from its corpse as a specter. The statistics of which are in the monster manual. When the specter appears, it gains temporary hit points equal to half your warlock's level. Roll initiative for the Spectre, which has its own turns. It obeys your verbal commands, and it gains a special bonus to attack its attack rolls equal to your charisma modifier, minimum of +0. The Spectre remains in your service until the end of your next long rest, at which point it vanishes to the afterlife. Once you find a Spectre with this feature, you can't use this feature again until you finish a long rest. Now, that's kind of harsh. Like, I mean, as a good character, you're probably not going to use that ability.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they had like an alternate for that, something that was a little less, I don't know, evil.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see a neutral character doing that because they don't care, especially if they happen to like really dislike whoever they killed. But.
Wait, so at level 6, you get to, buy the Spectre, and that has to serve you, right?
Yeah. Bring up the Spectre. Right-click and bring up a new tab with that Spectre.
I already have the Spectre.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if you look at it, yeah, it's a challenging one. It gets it gets to move through difficult terrain and stuff like that. And yeah, an object, you know, and it gets a life drain.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, like, read the description there. A specter is the angry and fettered spirit of a humanoid that has been prevented from passing to the afterlife. Specters no longer possess connections to who and what they were. They are condemned to walk the world forever. Now, they don't walk it forever because you banish them at the end of the day. Some are spawned when dark magic or the touch of a wraith rips a soul from the living body.
Ooh. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's a specter, but it's not a specter because this description involves a specter that lasts for a while, but it still seems a little harsh to tear someone's soul from their body and bind them to your service. It's like, Power spell, at least it only lasts for a day. I don't know. I still feel like that's going to be kind of taxing on good people.
You know? That's going to be an ability where it's good, but also you can't use it because that would be defeating the purpose of your character.
Well, they get to eventually move on. And, like, if you slay, like, a big, bad, like, you know, evil tyrant, you're not going to, you know, feel bad about, you know, turning them into specters for a little
bit. I would still feel bad about turning them into specters. Nobody
gets to move on to hell afterwards.
Yeah, that's worse!
Well, I mean, whatever afterlife they're supposed to at that point, I'm sure. But, yeah, it just still feels a little, I don't know, it feels a little rough. I honestly kind of wish that they would have been like, here's a list of invocations you can take, or here's a list of spells you can choose from, or something like that. It may, like, create a specter one of them, or whatever.
I would reflavor it as, like, you get to create a, when you slay a, like, say when you slay a humanoid, the agony from your soul allows you to, like, once per long rest, create a creature that has the same statistics as a specter.
So, like, okay, so, like, make a smalcrum from...
Yeah.
From that person that died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, like, use their life force to create a creature instead of, like, their soul.
Okay.
So, you know, you still have to slay them.
So, yeah, you could flavor it maybe as, like, they use their last dying breath to create a spectral copy of themselves.
Yeah, that could be it.
That way you don't have to feel like you're doing something evil.
Or at least, you know, you're doing something mildly evil that's better than, you know,
binding their soul to your service.
Oh my god! I don't like that.
I just don't like it.
That hurts me.
So yeah, maybe you want to reflavor it to something that doesn't feel as evil.
Remember, most warlocks aren't good at alignment, you know. A typical warlock player is going to be neutral. Oh, so this is not...
No, I get it.
Which, I don't like that, actually, because having a spellcaster like somebody else, it's quite interesting, and you don't have to be evil to have, you know, a demon daddy.
Yeah.
What? That's not what are.
But, like, you don't have to...
No, you don't have to be evil. I said neutral, not evil.
Yeah, but you don't have to be neutral either. You can be good.
Yeah, no, and you could be. That's what we're saying is that you just need to reflavor it if you want to be good.
Yeah,
because it just feels too, you know, I don't know, on the edge.
Yeah.
The way it's currently doing. But moving on. Armor of Hexes. At 10th level, your hex grows more powerful. If the target cursed by your Hexblade's curse hits you with an attack roll, you can use your reaction to roll a d6. On a 4 or higher, the attack misses it. Instead misses you. Ah. Yeah, regardless of its roll. Whoa.
So basically, that means once for a reaction, and you can just basically flip a coin, and the attack will just be negated.
Yeah, that's basically the idea. Because a 4 or higher means that basically you have a 50% chance of it missing you.
AKA, we're nerds.
Yeah. I mean, you have to use your reaction, but, you know, you're probably going to be using this on the big boss anyways, right?
Yep.
And it's not like there's any way they can resist this. This is an unresistible ability.
Oh, yes.
So, like, this is really strong. You can use this against a lich or a kraken or
a beholder.
A dragon or a beholder. Yeah. And there's, like, or there's nothing they can roll that's going to get around this. If they're going to hit you, you can use a reaction to possibly 50% chance of not hitting it. That's pretty powerful.
Imagine having this ability, you hex the opponent, you use your Hexblade's curse, and then you take an invocation that allows you to curse them again. Just all those debuffs would be a pain.
Say you had enough levels at Rogue so that you had, you know, evasion.
At that point, I would have tossed everything out and been like, okay, whatever, I don't care.
Die.
Make me rock fall.
Alright, Master of Hexes. Starting at 14th level, you can spread your Hexblade's curse from a slain creature to another creature. When the creature is cursed by your Hexblade curse dies, you can apply the curse to a different creature you can see within 30 feet of you, provided you aren't incapacitated. When you apply the curse in this way, you don't regain hit points from the death of the previously cursed creature. So you sacrifice the gaining some hit points, which isn't all that much to begin with, to keep kind of spreading it like the spell Hex does.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting. I think the right situation is worth doing.
This is your last ability. This is supposed to be like your most powerful, Hexblade ability, and it's kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, I get what they're not trying to give you an unlimited amount of hexes, but I think I would have preferred something more like akin to the monk's ability, where if it says something like at the beginning of combat, if you don't have your hexblade curse, you've already used your hexblade curse for the day, you can use it again. You know, so if you're going from series of combat to combat to combat, you can keep spreading it. This basically says, if you're attacking a horde, you can keep spreading it. So if you're in a giant Dynasty Warriors-style battle,
I wish you got more use for the Hexblade Curse, though.
Yeah, I kind of wish it got up, like, at least giving you a second one or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, that at level 6 would have been nice, I don't know.
Yeah, like, level 6 ability is, like, really, really powerful.
Yeah.
Spectre is a CR1. And while CR isn't everything, it can give you some insight on how powerful Monster is.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's a nice little ability. Alright, so let's go to my character then.
Ooh my god,
so,
it's your character.
I made Snez a kobold. See if there are any race abilities that were relevant. See, Grovel, Cower, and Beg, this is something that Snez will do occasionally, like to do combat per se all the time. They like to kind of try to get around it and talk their way out of things. And this is a way to, they might, you know, use that groveling and cowering so they can, get that advantage on somebody and sneak attack them or whatever.
By the way, I hate that this is a race ability. It assumes that all kobolds are, are just groveling, cowering, begging.
No, I don't like that either.
Well, yeah, I get what you're saying. I kind of agree, but at the same time, like, it's because they're small, they can do such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what they're hinting at, is that this should be an ability, technically, that any small race should be able to access if they want.
Yes.
But not necessarily just the kobold.
Yeah.
And then there's pack tactics. If you have advantage on attack rolls against a creature, if at least one of your allies is within 5 feet of the creature and the ally is incapacitated.
So basically, this just allows everyone to get advantage.
Yeah, basically, yeah, you can give yourself an advantage on attack rolls. This kind of runs into the whole idea that that kobolds run in packs and things like that.
So they feel much more comfortable.
Yeah, feel more comfortable and stuff.
Yeah.
I get it. It also works with your party, so.
I like it, honestly, because, being surrounded by big people makes you harder to, makes it easier for you to, slip in and just stab. They won't notice you.
Yeah, this feels more appropriate. And then there's a sunlight sensitivity, which I don't like. There's so many negatives on a kobold. I use the race because I like the race flavorfully, but it makes it a harder character to make that I want to play because that sunlight sensitivity is just such a hurtful thing.
Yeah, you have to cover up all the time.
I mean, you already don't get the best ability score improvements. I think it's only like a +1, isn't it? Or +2, and that's it.
You just get
a +2 ability, and pack tactics is very good.
Oh, yes.
And cower, grovel, and beg is actually very good for what it is.
That sunlight sensitivity just makes it so bad, especially because those, small creatures already have a good chunk of disadvantages.
Yeah,
The
dark vision's nice.
Almost every single creature has dark vision.
Yeah, except for pathetic humans.
And tritons.
And tritons.
That live in the bottom of the sea.
It's so weird. All right, let's go to class features.
I live at the bottom of the sea where it's dark all the time. I don't have dark vision.
Actually, we'll go back to the class features. Go to the description real quick. So, I decided to go with the idea that Snez here is a blacksmith. A vengeful blacksmith. Yes.
That's not a background!
What's that?
You can't make a background! That's called vengeful blacksmith. Like, blacksmith would be fun.
No, it is because of the background of Snez. The whole idea behind Snez is, they were part of a group of kobolds who, worshipped the black dragon, and the black dragon killed and ate pretty much the whole clan, while Snez was out getting, supplies. And
pick up berries.
Yeah.
Grab some fruit.
Now the vengeful blacksmith background that I made was basically a combination of the haunted one and the far traveler. The far traveler, I believe, is in Sword Coast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a background from Sword Coast. And basically, the idea is that whenever Snez goes to a new place, because they kind of stick out and are a little different, everyone kind of wants to pay attention to them and kind of figure out what's going on with them. It's a very kind of a social aspect to the character. Nice. And Snez makes weapons. That's what Snez does. Snez makes and sells weapons. That's how they make their money. And they go around recruiting, other followers to their patron. I'll go over their patron in a minute. So the alignment, I believe, is lawful and neutral. The weapon that, Snez follows is called Malfeasance Foe. It's a legendary weapon that I made. The idea is it's a weapon that's all about getting justice and justice and vengeance to a certain degree on people who have done people wrong. And Malfeasance Foe is just looking for a wielder eventually who can, achieve that justice that they're looking for. It's a lawful neutral weapon as well. It's not necessarily good or evil. And that's kind of the code that Snez follows, is the idea is to provide weapons and equipment to people who are looking to achieve justice or vengeance.
Yeah.
Because Snez kind of sees them the same way, but.
I know, Magic Gathering nerds not going to get this, but the fact that your dragon ate all the kobolds reminds me of, the Lara, where the dragons sometimes ate the goblins.
Oh, I mean, you mean dragon, the card, like, the card Dragon Fodder?
Yeah.
Because they had those in Tarkir, and I think it was in Alara.
Yeah.
It was the first time it popped up.
Yeah, like dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah, where, like, they fed themselves to dragons.
Yeah.
That could be another way to flavor the kobolds.
Yeah, I think the kobolds of Kara Keep, actually, in old magic lore, got fed to a dragon as well.
Yeah, Prosh.
Yeah.
And then they revolted, and they sacrificed themselves to a different kobold.
Yeah.
Then there was a revolt in that, where they sacrificed themselves to the dragon again.
Yep. Yep, he's adorable.
You can't see Emma's face. She's like,
okay. She's like, okay. Look at the character description below.
So before we continue, you're combat, right? Like, the Snez is for combat?
Yeah. This
has a lot of social interaction as well.
Well, no, yeah. I wanted to have a lot of... combat characters are boring.
Yeah,
in my opinion. They're just straight up combat focused. There's a lot of combat focus to this character. That's why I took the hex one. Yeah, it's like the most combat focused warlock patron there is.
How I mean, my monk used like combat with a flavor.
Yeah, this is the flavor. The idea is that Snez will pop up and maybe assist the party with reforging a weapon of legend or helping them find one or something like that. And
then kill the dragonborn.
And then they sell them extravagantly overpriced weapons and armor. But Snez will show up in the weirdest places because Snez can show up at the edge of a volcano, deep within, goblin territory, because Snez can survive just about anything. Snez is crazy.
Does Snez hate dragonborns, or...?
No, just black dragons.
What about black dragonborns?
Probably would dislike them at first, to be honest.
would be like, ooh, okay, well, I'm gonna tolerate you.
But... Doesn't like the Black Dragons? Racist.
But,
Sorry. Oh my god, you notice.
Okay, so then their hair is none. Skin is dark red, eyes glowing green, about 2'7", 30 pounds.
So you could just toss them off the face of the earth and they would
be them.
Them.
Yeah, age 21, gender is none. They use they, them pronouns.
They're non-binary.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm a terrible human being.
And so that's the basic description of Stas. Now let's go back to class abilities. I'll kind of get into where the combat stuff comes in. So I went with Arcana Intimidation. I took, what was it, Insight and something, some other thing else. From my,
I don't remember.
Yeah. And then, so this character is 9th level, so they have 5 invocations. I went with the Devil's Sight, so I can kind of...
see your opponent.
So, yeah, I can always see my opponent. And the idea is I have to do the Darkness spell as well, so... One of the tactics that Stas will use is to cast darkness and either run away, or if they feel they can overcome their opponent that way, they'll fight them in darkness because they're not affected by it. I took the Thirsty Blade.
We've been talking about that combo, Devil Sight and Darkness, for like months.
Yeah, I love it. The Thirsty Blade, so they can attack twice, obviously. You can take Path to the Blade, which is the path they took in case it wasn't obvious. And then there's the Beguiling Influence for Deception and Persuasion. That's mostly to complement the blacksmithing skills and to be a better merchant, I should say. There's a Relentless Hex. That's the one that lets you teleport to the target of your hex or curse of some sort. I figure if you're going to take a Hex Blade, you should take at least one of those curses, curse upgrades, basically.
Yeah.
And then I took Eldritch Smite, which is not a...
Nope, you did not take Eldritch Smite.
Eldritch Smite is not one of those invocations I'd normally take, would normally take for a warlock. But because Snez is so small, the idea that Snez can straight up just knock a huge giant to the ground in one hit is awesome. The little booger just jumps up and just hacks a giant and it falls to the ground prone. That just feels awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially seeing that for the first time would be like,
oh, yeah. No. And that's like how I imagine you would introduce Snez to the characters.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly meant to be an NPC again. I like, it's a fun idea for
an NPC. Making NPCs are like lots of fun, but they're also like, you don't use them enough, so you don't want to make them. But they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining, like, Snez, like a fifth level Snez, like, on a boat, the Kraken comes, that's like, gonna tear up the ship, and Snez just knocks it prone.
Yeah, and it just sinks to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah,
and
it's just like, woo! Just sink.
Yay, go away!
Just like,
like, what? And yeah, I basically, the idea is that Snez has a lot of the Black Dragon, the red skin, but has some of the other Black Dragon features because of the influence the Black Dragon had on the clan.
Yeah.
And yeah, basically Snez was seeking, retribution, and that they found Malfeasance Foe came to them and offered them basically the ability to get the power they could actually get to eventually defeat the Black Dragon.
It was like, yo, I mean, I know you want to defeat this, but I'll help you. And Snez was like, yeah, let's go.
Exactly.
So, a small rant, but I hate, like, in alignment for the Kobold race, it says, Kobolds are fundamentally selfish. No!
Yeah, I know. Well, they're trying to work around a lot of that stuff. I don't know if they have applied all those things to D&D Beyond yet, or if they feel not doing the evil and good is just enough. But they also say that, especially in Tasha's, they make a real big point of saying, your character can be whatever you want it to be.
I don't understand, but this is like, this isn't just like the player characters, this is telling the DMs what to do, this is how they make all the kobold monsters.
Yeah,
Well, I mean...
I'd love to see a D&D town with a kobold mayor.
You can do whatever you want in your campaign. And I actively encourage you to do something different with kobolds because they are so, like... I've played 100 D&D campaigns, and every one of them, the kobolds are small little idiots who you basically just sweep your sword around and clear them out like bugs. And...
Oh, yeah.
You rifle through and kick their corpses and steal a gold piece from everyone once in a while. And you're like, oh, whatever, kobolds. 30 of them is easy.
No, like, if you especially want to, like, if this is your first time DMing and you want to, like, get some veterans, people that you've ever played with before, just to get them interested.
Ignore alignments.
Yeah, ignore alignments and do what, reflavor everything. Look through, write down what they originally are, and then scribble it out and write down what they are in your world.
Yeah, exactly.
Do reflavor things. Them and get people to love them, and then when they go on different campaigns, they'll be like, well, I don't want to actually kill this kobold now, because, like, what if, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
They'll have more sympathy. They won't just see something as one thing. It won't be stereotyped anymore.
Exactly. And that's part of the reason why I made this warlock a kobold, because I wanted the kobold who felt powerful, you know, who felt like they were able to achieve something. And, you know, so if you do end up wanting to use, you know, SNES in your campaign, go for it. I made them non-binary for a variety of reasons, but, mostly the idea was that they're going to, you know, do their own thing. You can make them attracted to whoever you want. You can, you know, have fun with it, you know?
Yeah, do whatever you want.
And it's just an interesting, powerful character, and I just kind of wanted to be that way. So, any other questions or thoughts on SNES before we move on? I chose some equipment, but that stuff's minor. I mean, you could really vary
it. Yeah, this is mostly NPC. That stuff, you can really change it at any point.
I mean, I went with the, like, obviously the Dragon Slayer Scimitar is something that they're going to make. They made some Mithril half plate because they can wear medium armor. The Sentinel Shield because that just makes sense. You know, it's a really good, one of the better magic items in general. Bring up the Sentinel Shield. Yeah. But holding the shield, you have advantage on initiative rolls and wisdom perception checks. So.
It feels more like, kind of like a weapon of warning in that ability.
Yeah, it's kind of like the weapon of warning.
Yeah.
It's a little different. I like that it's one of the few things that gives you advantage on initiative rolls. So the idea is, you go a little faster, gives you some more defense, and makes you perceive, basically helps you find ambushes and stuff better, and things like that. So, it's just one of those really good magic items. I happen to like it. It's not too powerful, but it's very fun, flavorful. So, yeah, that's it. I also will, put in the show notes where I have a link to the characters and stuff. I'll have in that folder as well, Malfeasance Foe.
Yes.
The legendary weapon. It's very powerful. Like they're supposed to be. That's the whole point of legendary weapons. Basically, will let you compel duels with people and do all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful, powerful things. But it chooses who you compel the duel with. You don't get to choose.
It's like, hey, I want to duel somebody. All right, duel your teammate. Ooh,
yeah. No. That it wouldn't happen that way, but it's a smart weapon. And it's fun. And I think if, you know, you want to have the Malfeasance Foe show up in your campaign, remember that it's lawful neutral. It's about justice and vengeance and not about good or evil, so.
It's like that the world is gray and it's not like, you know, black or white.
Yeah.
I should also have a requirement that it should be required to attune and that only creatures that have a vengeance can attune to it.
Yeah, they need to be lawful, and I would think that, yeah, I put lawful in there, but a vengeance or some kind of justice they need to write, like, since that's the justice that needs to be done.
Although most people with, like, that a vengeance are not lawful, they're usually chaotic.
Yeah, and that's what makes it a little different. You know, they need to be lawful still. So it's probably going to be a paladin is what they're really probably looking for.
Yeah, like a vengeance
paladin. Would be like the most likely candidate for it.
Oh my.
And so you can have SNES be like helping the good characters, and the vengeful paladin could still be could actually be the main bad guy. And yeah. SNES is not necessarily going to work against the player characters, because that's not how SNES does things. So Kobold is from Volo's Guide to Monsters, and the X-Blade is from Xanathar's Guide to Everything. So that means our next one is you, right?
Mm-hmm. Very old one, aka my mother. Okay, your patron has mysterious entity whose nature is entirely foreign to the fabric of reality. Previous point. From the far realm, the space beyond reality, or to be one of the elder gods known only in legends. His motives are incomprehensible to mortals, and his knowledge is so immense that the ancients and ancient that even the greatest libraries pale in comparison to the vast secrets it holds. The great old one might be unaware of your existence, or entirely indifferent for you, but the secrets you have learned allow you to draw your magic from it.
There you go.
Previous point.
Alright.
Oh my god, be nice to mom!
I'll stop this. Etsy's, you know, it could be like Cthulhu, or, you know, basically anything that's like so old and eldritch that, like, older than the gods themselves, basically.
Nice.
That's what this really is. And you got your expanded spell list, you get Dissonant Whispers, Tasha's Hideous Laughter, Exact Thoughts, Phantasmal Force, Clairvoyance, Sending, Dominate Beast, Ivar's Black Tentacles, Dominate Person, and Telekinesis.
So a lot of it's, the basic theme here is madness and, I mean, divination that comes from that madness. Yeah. It's, like, you know so much you're crazy. And you can spread that craziness.
Which I've always loved, by the way. About class.
I think that's a great concept. So that's basically what the Great Old One's about.
Or at least you seem crazy. You
know? Exactly.
So,
yeah. Previous point.
That would be nice.
Starting at first level, your alien knowledge uses the ability to touch the minds of other creatures. And telepathically speak to any creature you can see within 30 feet of you. You don't need to share a language with the creature for it to understand your telepathic utterances, but the creature must be able to understand at least one language.
And that's the awakened mind.
Yeah, awakened mind. Sorry, did I not say
you,
that?
You forgot. Yeah, you forgot that.
It's fine, though. And then, Entropic Ward. At 6th level, you learn to magically ward yourself against attack and turn an enemy's failed strike into a good luck for yourself. When a creature makes an attack roll against you, use your reaction to impose disadvantage on that roll. The attack misses you, the next attack roll against that creature has advantage if you make it before the end of your next turn. Once you use this feature, can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest.
So I like the awakened mind because, especially since you're making a social interaction-based character, this lets you do a variety of things. You can communicate,
teammates.
You know, with your teammates. It doesn't have a limit on how many times you can use it. And you can use it against your foes. You can use it to, like, whisper crazy shit in their mind or whatever. And so, like, you can use this, you know, kind of offensively and socially. There are a lot of different ways that you can use this ability.
And, plus, since you're a Kenku, you can mimic other people's voices, you can totally trick somebody.
Oh because your character's gonna be a Kenku.
Yeah, my character's a Kenku.
So that's gonna be interesting in its own right. And then, the Entropic Ward, that's mostly just a combat ability, really. I'm not really sure how you can use that much any other way, really.
Yeah, no, you're right. But then you get Thought Shield. Starting at 10th level, your thoughts can't be read telepathy, or other means unless you allow it. You also have resistance to psychic damage. Whenever a creature deals psychic damage to you, a creature takes the same amount of damage that you do.
Wow. So, I mean, like, okay, technically this is a combat ability, but I see a lot of times people using telepathy or psychic damage against people outside of combat.
Well, yeah, and you can't be read by telepathy.
Yeah, so which makes you a safer, like, messenger, say, if you were going to deliver, like, you know, yeah, you're delivering messages for somebody and you don't want anyone to know where it is.
Yeah, he's a very messenger-based character.
Yeah, so, like, this is very nice. It keeps you from being probed and prodded and things like that. I think that you could probably get around this ability if you were to drug the character enough. but it had to be a heck of a drugging, I think. Almost the knockout point.
And then your last ability, Create Thrall, at 14th level, you gain the ability to infect a humanoid's mind with the alien magic, like the mom magic, of your patron. You can use your actions to have incapacitate humanoid. That creature is then charmed by you until a remove curse spells cast on certain conditions remove for it or use this feature again. You communicate telepathically with the charmed creature as long as the two of you are in the same plane of existence.
Whoa.
Oh.
That's really, like, it's not always useful, but that's really good. You get to charm somebody. It's not like it doesn't have a duration. It's just until you decide to charm somebody else. So, I mean.
Yeah, charmed is pretty good.
Yeah, so a charmed creature can't attack the charmer or target the charmer with harmful abilities or magical effects. A charmer has advantage on any ability check to interact socially with the creature.
So basically, if incapacitate somebody and then just use his ability and they're just, yeah. And there's no limit. You can use this as many times as you want a day.
Yeah, so that's just kind of cool. I like that. I'm thinking, like, in particular, this could be quite useful, say, I think, on a beholder, because they usually have a bunch of minions and stuff like that. You could knock out one of the minions, make it a thrall, and send it into the headquarters of the beholder, and learn a lot of stuff about what's going on.
Do some
sabotaging.
You just charm it.
Yeah. But you can speak with it telepathically, so you can just be like, you're charming it. It's gonna just casually tell you things or point or look at things that you want to see or whatever. I mean, charming is pretty potent.
Makes sense.
Overall, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's not a direct control, but you can do a lot with it.
Yeah. Speaking of charming mindless humanoids, it's time to go to break.
So welcome to our...
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Darbrennan.
How about you, you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
When they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like... Don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's... much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
Don't happen know where there's, like, secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks! Did you say ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry,
and then we'll grab dinner.
Our shameless plug break. You can find us on Twitter at ourdorky. If you want to talk about it, talk about us, just use the hashtag #ThreePillarsCast. That also works on Instagram, where our handle is
Our Dorky Family.
Emma mostly runs the the Instagram. That's why it's better than the Twitter.
Sometimes. It depends on my post.
Yeah. Depends on how many cat photos she wants to post that week.
Not at all.
And then we also have a YouTube channel, in case you're listening to this on the podcast. We have a YouTube channel, it's Our Dorky Family, where we have this show, we have our D&D live play, which will change as time goes.
Yeah.
So we have one campaign that we've finished doing all the parts of it, but not all the episodes are up yet. And we have other campaigns that we haven't even finished, you know, getting started yet for the channel. So we want the content. It'll be up there eventually. It just takes me forever to edit. I'm a bum. So there's that. If you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube, this is, of course, is a podcast as well. You can be found where any fine podcasts are found. If it's not on whatever you happen to listen to as a podcast and you really want it, comment on the video. Get a hold of us on our email address, which is ourdorkyfamily@gmail.com. Let us know, and I'll work on getting it put on that podcast format. I just don't know if I'm missing anybody at this point. It's on a lot of places. So that's it for our break. So catch you later.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So welcome back from the break.
Kaka. Yes. Hello.
Tyler's gonna go over his character, who is.
Nope. I'm just not gonna go over him.
Alright, then so what are my characters?
Alright.
Okay, now my character is Frilly. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know. I literally turned on the random name generator.
So Frilly?
Yeah, Frilly.
Okay.
And then he is a Kenku Warlock. Basically, you know, he's a Kenku. And all Kenkus, basically, there are these bird people that served a god, and then they betrayed their god, so their god took their flight away from them.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I'm saying their god is not because I'm too lazy to look up the god, it's because they literally don't specify.
Well, that's fine.
Anyways, so basically he found ancient Eldritch knowledge and, you know, became a warlock. Yeah, and they're able to tap into that knowledge to gain magical abilities, and one of the most common things he does is he flies with that magic, because, you know, Kenku wants to fly, basically.
Oh, okay, so.
Because they were stripped of it thousands of years ago, now they're trying to get it back.
I'm assuming it's a he?
Yeah.
He uses that knowledge to, that power to fly again. I think one of the big things, that's why he does all this stuff for this great old one. The stuff he has to do. Alright, so, what about the Kenku race drew you to the Kenku for, this character? Like, why does that make the most sense for this character?
Because Kenku, they want to fly, and of course the best way of doing that is gain magic.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, they're not super smart or dedicated race, you know, that's why a lot of them are rogues or thieves. Because, you know, they are messengers. You know, they don't really commit to something. They only do a job to gain money and power.
As someone who plays a rogue a lot, that feels slightly insulting. But,
I'm not really committed. They'll just be like, and I'll just steal her purse and just walk out town.
Yeah, that still not feeling better. But
still hurt.
Yeah. No, but you get my point.
Okay, so but one of the things about this character you said was that they're a messenger, right?
So yeah, they're a messenger.
They're a messenger style. Okay. So but then one of the big things about the Kenku, the fact that they can only repeat what's been said, so they just repeat verbatim what the message is and then travel and communicate that to somebody?
They can take a message for getting their, becoming part of, getting all this Eldritch knowledge is he gained a lot of words. And he's able to understand any language. The problem with that is sometimes he can't, differentiate between, common and Eldritch, or common and goblin.
Oh, okay.
But sometimes he messes up his language.
Because to him, that just makes sense of whatever language he's heard that phrase in, he says it in whatever language.
Yeah.
So, would it be common for him to, say, take a message, say, from a king, and then take it to the whoever's supposed to receive it, and just repeat exactly how the king said it? Because lot of times messages, what gets lost in translation of messages is the inflection of the speech. Yeah.
And that's why Kenkus are great messengers, because they can only repeat what's been said.
Yeah, I like that.
So it's like Mockingjays?
In a way, yeah.
Also, my character would take the message, he'd take it to assassins, get paid, tell them to wait, take it to the actual person, then get paid by the king, and then just walk out town.
Okay, yeah, so this character is not good, I take it?
No. My pack boon is Pack the Tome, gives me three cantrips. That helps with my social interaction, because since I do still have limited language, I can use spells like, Prestidigitation, Thaumaturgy, Druidcraft, Minor Illusion to commit a messages better.
Oh, okay, I see. You can just create an image of what you're trying to communicate, even if you don't have the words for it.
Yeah.
Okay, that works. And then, what other invocations did you take that are relevant to the social, especially the social aspects of this character?
So, Ascendant Staff allows you to levitate, kind of like flying.
Okay.
Masking Many Faces allows you to, disguise self at will. Sculptor Flash allows you to cast polymorph once using a Warlock spell slot. You can't do so again until you finish long rest.
Okay.
Aspect of the Moon, you can't sleep. You no longer need to sleep, so that allows you to keep moving.
Okay, so
message faster.
I can get that. So this guy himself you use because sometimes you need to get a message to somebody who can't receive a message, say from a Kenku.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that makes sense. The polymorph is to get you into more places or to just fly.
Eyes of the Runekeeper, you can read all writing.
Oh, there you go. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so Eyes of the Runekeeper, so you can read all writing. So you can read any of the messages at least. Which is good. Alright. Was there any what was your background that you go with?
Criminal/spy.
Okay, that makes sense. Yes, is there any magical items that you thought were really relevant to this character?
He has some crystal balls that allows him to, basically his magic items are a bunch of crystal balls that, one allows him, basically allow him to use, scry at will, basically, and one allows him to read the mind of whoever he's scrying, one allows him to, communicate telepathically, and one allows him to, use true sight on that target.
Oh, okay. So, was this character meant to be more of an NPC or more of a player here?
You could play him up as an NPC, you play up as a villain, as a messenger on conveying a message that could bring great sorrow.
All right.
You play him as a party member, honestly, you know, tags along with the party just because they're going to where he needs to go.
Oh, more like an NPC that goes with the group for a little while.
A player could also play this pretty easily. I remember that.
Yeah.
So your characters are very, not really easy to play.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. The Kenku is hard to play, so.
But you could play this because, he gets elder knowledge that allows him to speak better.
Yeah.
That was a good workaround.
Yeah, that's a good workaround, so you can speak more. More often you have more words to work with.
A social interaction, I chose the race that can speak the word.
Yeah, well, that made it a challenge. Which I think it was kind of fun. So, anything else about this character that you think is important? Did you have any spells that you took in particular because they were flavorful?
I think I took the flying spell, invisibility, suggestion, counterspell, the spell magic, fly, of course.
Okay.
Remove major group curves, major image, yeah.
So this is going to be a good, henchman for a bad guy as well.
Yeah.
I would think. Because, you got the counter spells and stuff like that to kind of assist the big bad with things. Not a particularly powerful character on the surface, but this is the kind of character that can really mess up the party. Something fierce. If done right. All right. Well, there you go. Okay, so Kenku is from...
Rose, Guys, Monster, or Great Old Ones from Clear's Handbook.
All right. So next we have Emma, and you're going to be going over the subclass of the Fathomless?
Yes, yes.
And the Fathomless, this is from Tasha's Cauldron Everything, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's one of the new ones. It was Unearthed Arcana before, so.
Yeah. So... The Fathomless, they made a pact with, something underwater, the deep in the ocean, or, an element of plane of water, or, just a different world of just the sea, and you draw on that for power. They have an expanded spell list, which is basically at first level, you get Create or Destroy Water and Thunder Wave. At second level, you get Gust of Wind, Silence. At third, you get... Lightning Bolt and Sleet Storm. At fourth, you can control water and summon elemental, and you can only summon the water elemental, obviously. At fifth level, you get Bigamy's Hand, which appears in a tentacle, and Cone of Cold.
Okay, I have one thing to say. Giving Warlocks Lightning Bolt is like asking for your campaign to be ruined. Giving any spellcaster Lightning Bolt.
it's definitely a powerful spell, I agree. I do like the flavor of this, though. It's very, very ocean-esque. It screams of, you definitely want to be on the coast, or you want to be on a ship or something like that, with the Fathomless. And I like that. It could be a demon, a water demon, or it could be a kraken or something like that. A lot of different fun things. I like that it has a stormy element to it as well.
And summon elemental, let's see, it gives you a pretty strong
feature. Is summon elemental a 1 minute spell or a one action?
1 hour. 1 hour.
No, the cost.
One action.
Yeah, wow, that's really quick.
At level 4, let's see, that would be armor class 15, and, 50 hit points, good bunch of different speeds, or since it could be water only, 40 feet, swim 40 feet, and then has resistance to acid.
Alright.
It's very strong.
It moves through a small space, it can attack twice, and each attack does... is 1d10 plus 4 plus 4, so 1d10 plus 8 bludgeoning damage.
There you go. All right. So.
So this is very strong.
Yeah.
So at first level, you get two things. You get Tentacle of the Deep. You can magically summon a spectral tentacle that strikes at your foes. As a bonus action, you create a 10-foot-long tentacle at a point that you can see within 60 feet of you. The tentacle lasts for 1 minute or until you use its feature to create another one. When you create it, you can make a melee spell attack against one creature within 10 feet of it. On a hit, the target takes 1d8 cold damage, and its speed is reduced by 10 feet till the start of your next turn. When you reach 10th level of this class, the damage increases to 2d8. So this spell really just increases and gets better, like, the more you level up. You also get Gift of the Sea. At first level, you gain a swimming speed of 40 feet, and you can breathe underwater.
Okay, so that really leans into the...
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, it really leans into the exploration part of your character that you really want to...
Yeah. So at 6th level, you get two things as well. You get Oceanic Soul, which you are now even more at home in the depths. You gain resistance to cold damage. In addition, when you are fully submerged, any creature that is also fully submerged can understand your speech, and you can understand theirs. So that means you can talk to others while fully submerged underwater, which I think is cool.
Well, yeah, that's cool, because, like, it has the exploration of the cold damage, because it gets cold really deep underwater, which can really affect your character quite a bit if you go too far.
Yeah.
And then the social aspect to be able to speak with creatures underwater is really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So at 6th level as well, you also get Guardian Coil. Your Tentacle of the Deeps can defend you and others, imposing itself between them and harm. When you are a creature you see takes damage within 10 feet of the tentacle, you can use a reaction to choose one of those creatures and reduce the damage of that creature by 1d8. When you reach 10th level, it increases again.
I like that this particular class really has thresholds where the abilities upgrade.
Yeah.
I thought the tentacles weren't that powerful, but the fact that they kind of, at higher levels, they get better is kind of nifty.
Yeah. So at 10th level, you get one, which is, I liked it. I really like this one, actually. Grasping Tentacles. You learn the spell Ivar's Black Tentacles. It counts as a warlock spell, so you have a different count against the number of spells you know. You can also cast it once without a spell slot, and you gain the ability to do so when you finish a long rest. I'll talk about this spell in a minute. Whenever you cast a spell, your matron of magic blows through you, granting you a number of temporary hit points equal to your warlock spell. Moreover, damage can't break your concentration on the spell.
Okay, so, you're on your warlock level, but yeah.
Yeah. So, Ivar's Black Tentacles, which I don't think we talked about. So this is good for this one. Its duration is 1 minute, its casting time is 1 action, it's level 4. Squirming ebony tentacles fill a 20-foot square on the ground that you can see within range. For the duration, these tentacles turn the ground into an area into difficult terrain. When a creature enters the afflicted area for the first time on a turn or starts its turn there, the creature must succeed on a dexterity saving throw or take 3d6 bludgeoning damage and be restrained by the tentacles until the spell ends.
Oh, wow.
A creature then starts to turn in the area and is already restrained by the tentacles takes 3d6 bludgeoning damage. A creature restrained by the tentacles can use its action to make a strength and dexterity check its choice against your spell, save DC. On a success, it frees itself.
In the restrained condition, I'm not familiar with that one. I haven't used it very often. Is that like being grappled?
A restrained creature's speed becomes zero and cannot benefit from any bonuses to its speed. Attack rolls against this creature have advantage, and the creature's attack book has disadvantage. The creature has disadvantage on the series saving throw. So basically, you just can't move.
Oh, wow.
You are stuck there until you get yourself free.
Huh.
This spell is for wizard and only the great old one warlock.
Wow.
So wizards have this spell, but warlocks also do.
Yeah, I like how you get to use it once per day for free.
Oh, yeah.
That's just cool. I like that you could, it's a, what level spell is it?
10th. Oh, it's 4th level.
A 4th level spell?
Yeah, 10th level.
Okay, and so you can use your spell slots to cast it again if you want to. But I mean, wow. That's a 20-foot square on the ground, 3d6 bludgeoning damage.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And every time it restarts its turn and it doesn't free itself, it takes another one. So if you accidentally spend, like, 10 turns in there, you're dead.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I want to note is that you need a piece from a tentacle from a giant octopus or a giant squid in order to cast it as a component. That means that if your patron is, like, super, you know, like, very, like, protective of sea life, that might not go so well, getting those ingredients.
Well, yeah, but, okay, so assuming your patron's a big part of, you know, like, well, sea life is a big part of this character's life, for example. If you go to investigate the death of an octopus or a squid by, you know, nefarious actors or whatever, they're already dead. So if you harvest some giant, you know, you harvest some tentacle pieces from them, your patron's most likely not going to be upset with you. I mean, they're already dead at that point.
It's going to be upset with who they killed.
Yeah. And you could even justify that you use their pieces in order to get revenge. You know, I mean.
Yes.
I get what you're saying. That's a hard, thing to get. It doesn't say that it uses it up though. So if you could figure out how to preserve that.
It would rot though. You need like a chest of holding or something like that would preserve the food.
Yeah, you had to find some way of preserving it in like a jar or something that you could use.
Even in a jar, it would still grow a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're right. It's a ward of magic. You can find someone who would be able to preserve a tentacle well enough for you if you pay the right price, I'm sure. So, there you go. Yeah, I mean, it's a valid point, though.
I just want to point it out. Okay, so...
At 14th level, you get Fathom's Plunge, which is your last one. You can magically open temporary conducts to watery destinations. As an action, you can teleport yourself and up to 5 other willing creatures that you can see within 30 feet of you. Amid a whirl of tentacles, you all vanish and then reappear up to 1 mile away in a body of water you've seen, pond size or larger, or within 30 feet of it, each of you appearing in an unoccupied space within 30 feet of the others. Once you use this feature, you cannot use it again until you finish a short or long rest. Which is one of the main reasons why I chose this one for exploration. Because if you, especially in a world like where there's lots of ponds, lots of rivers that are huge, lots of maybe oceans.
Lakes or oceans,
You can travel back there whenever you want. So you can make like your main like town that you go back to every time to go get like more resources right next to a pond. And then you can just travel back there whenever you need to, then travel back.
Well, I mean,
as long as you know where it is. And that's...
It's only so 1 mile away, which limits it quite a bit. You're probably going to be further than a mile away from the town.
But you can, like, at least get there. You can hop over. It's a mile if you don't have to spend extra time traveling.
I mean, but if
you
say
you're... combine it with other spells, too.
Yeah, if your DM wanted to make things easier for your group, they could easily put a large body of water next to most of the dungeons, for example, that you're going to go into, or whatever. You know, a lot of towns are going to have a large body of water near them.
That's how they will live.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a major feature of a lot of towns. Not all, but...
Yeah.
So, it's something you can definitely use. I kind of wish this had been an earlier level ability. Honestly, if they switched it with the 10th level one, I would have understood.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather have the other one at 10th level, but I'd like to have this one at like 6th level or something. I think you'd be able to use it a little more, but...
And I can't think, like, mine is going to be really good because, you know, since the whole world's flooded, you basically can just teleport anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, anywhere within a mile, whoop, you're out. I mean, that's pretty powerful. But, yeah, in the right settings, this is going to be super powerful. In some settings, not so much.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wish... I wish for a 14th level ability, maybe it was 10 miles.
Maybe you can even reflavor this one. If you super don't like the 1 mile, you can talk with your DM and ask them to reflavor it to be 5 miles.
Or maybe give an ability, like, you can spend, like, 10 or 12 hours, like, and like create a body of water places. So you get, you know, it, like require some components. It'll allow you to use it in more settings. You get teleport.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the control waters and the, there's some weather spell that you can cast as well.
Oh yeah, gives you creating the destroyed waters. So you can just cast that a couple times.
It has to be as big as a pond.
Yeah, it'd be, I mean, that's a lot. What's the fourth and fifth level spells?
But your fourth level spells control waters and someone elemental. And your fifth level spells are Big Bees, Pan, and Cone of Gold.
Maybe the summon elemental could help you with that too. Maybe summon elemental.
That has to be a DM choice though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like, okay, but if you're setting up some kind of plan for a big bad or whatever, and you don't have a body of water nearby, maybe you could spend a day or two summoning elementals and having them help you create a body of water somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might have to flood a forest and kill a forest, but...
Oh, water is cooler though.
Yeah. Or something like that. You could do some really good stuff with it. And I get what you're saying. This was a very exploration, friendly, patch. So I see what you're doing there. 10 gallons of clean water. Yeah, because this is created to destroy water. 10 gallons of clean water.
And then once you get to that, fifth level, or fifth level spell slot, you get to create 50 gallons of water.
Yeah. So, you could do a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it might take you a little while to make a lake, but...
I'd probably, just use a couple of spell slots, and boom, you can create a pond.
Yeah, true. It is only a pond. Ponds aren't that big.
No.
Still a lot of water in ponds, actually, but... you could also... Oh, you know how there's a magic item, that lets you, lets you create, a geyser of water or whatever. Mm-hmm. But either way, there's a magic item that lets you, just have, unlimited fresh water. If you had that thing, you could probably make yourself a little pond pretty easily.
It's not unlimited. It's, something like 50 gallons or something. But, yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah. And you can just keep activating that and make a lot of water. So, you could make a lake. Yeah, we're kind of deviating a lot on this. I suppose we should get to your character. Alright, so tell us about your character.
My character is a Yanti Pureblood. There's lots of flavors. Don't worry. It's okay. Don't be mad.
You evil Yanti. I'm going to assume that you're evil because you're one of the evil class or one of the evil races.
Don't get me started on this.
Alright. Okay, so why choose Yanti?
We'll tell you all chose evil races from Bolos. They're also monstrous. Monstrous, evil, Bolo races.
That's because we're amazing.
Yeah, and then what alignment did you end up making?
Well, I made Zagria.
Zagria.
I love her name. Zagria is neutral.
Oh, just truly neutral?
Yeah, she's just truly neutral.
Did we all make neutral characters?
I think we did.
I think we did. Huh. That's funny. We didn't plan that.
I wish we did. That was
wow. Weird.
Okay, so what made you choose the Yanti?
I really just wanted to reflavor the Yanti. That's the only reason why I chose it. It's like one of the two reasons. And the other reason is that you have poison immunity. That's it.
Which is an understandable exploration ability.
You chose a Yanti and you don't even know that they have magic resistance?
Well, they have magic resistance too, but I don't really think that would be really interesting. I didn't really think that would be relevant.
That's a super strong ability. What makes Yanti so powerful?
It does apply to exploration because of a lot of magical traps.
I don't know. I didn't really think of it as magic, as, you know, something relevant and need to bring up right away.
Yeah.
I'll bring it up later, don't worry.
Okay, so did you, I know you want to make it not necessarily evil, obviously. Neutral.
Yes.
Did you want to maintain the emotionlessness or at least the repression of their emotions to a certain degree?
Yes, I wanted to, that's how I was going to reflavor this. Yanti in this magical world I've built in my mind.
Okay.
They are trying to expand again. because, you know, not being so limited. And they realize that with diplomacy, they can expand easier because more people will be like, okay, I want to move there.
Alright.
But it's harder to be diplomatic with little to no emotions. You can't, it really is. You have to be able to sympathize with people. So in this world I've created in my mind, and maybe if you guys want to steal this too, I'm fine with that. They're trying to regain that humanity back, that, you know, little bit of emotions back. But since it's been suppressed for, you know, years and years and years.
Yeah, it's just not culturally.
Yeah, it's just not. There. It's there. They're trying. It's like, you know, that best friend who's just trying to, you know, be bright, but they're not.
Okay, so, and your idea of this,
trying their
this
best.
Character would be from a world where the auntie are not,
yeah.
Looking to sacrifice people and get more power, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. They're moving beyond that and they're like a next generation.
Yeah.
Who's trying to do something different.
Is this like an end to the means? Like after they do this different thing, then they'll sacrifice people and turn them into Yonkies?
Nope.
So this
they're
is.
They're just
this
trying
is,
to move past it.
Okay, so this is people who are getting past the evil forebears of their race and trying to move on. But they're struggling because they don't know how to do it yet because they haven't been exposed to it.
So this is very much supposed to be a player character.
Okay.
Or maybe an NPC who appears a lot to help you.
Okay, so you're trying to, basically change society. This character who's trying to change their whole society.
Maybe, at the beginning of the campaign, this character and, a few others are the only people who are trying to do this. Or at the end, they succeed. Or, you know, they fail. It's up to you. But I wanted this character to be something that's unknown to most Yonkies, or to be older Yonkies.
Oh, okay.
So, that's why I really liked the water element of the Fathomless One, because actually, at the background, they are smugglers. Oh. She is a smuggler. She smuggles things around. I'm betting mostly probably just documents that Yonkies try to get people to understand them more. But you can smuggle anything, really.
Okay, so mostly you're trying to smuggle information.
Yeah.
But and knowledge, not necessarily people or stuff.
Maybe people and maybe in case they need to escape. But, not stuff. And I really just love this. You know a lot of people with the smuggler thing, so it would tie in a lot with how Yonkies are so small that they know each other a lot. They can identify which one is a pure blood, which Yonki is, you know, each. Which I really liked about this.
Small boy, I know this is your thing, but you could probably always, if you want to play this, you probably work with your DM, because there are aquatic snakes, so you could.
You could definitely make the flavor of snake that you are a water snake.
You could bargain with your DM, get rid of your magic school resistance.
Okay, so this is not before you said kind of diplomat, but maybe, so not necessarily a diplomat from the Yonti and the other nations, more like a freedom fighter or
an
abolitionist or some sort or whatever.
Yeah, so more like in your campaign.
Yeah.
Would very much be working with.
Okay, I can see that.
So I chose Pack of the Talisman because I really liked this pack a lot for moving around.
Plus, it has more of a supporting other people role, which is kind of the idea behind this character too.
Scared is supposed to be more kind, other than guarded. Even though it's guarded as well, it's trying to break out, but it's also failing miserably.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Pact of the Talisman gives you an amulet, real quick, for a recap, that you can teleport to, that you can replace easily, and that you can just find
it. And you can share with other people.
You can share with others, too.
Okay. So, yeah, that's a newer one, so people might not be as familiar.
Yeah.
All right, so what invocations did you go for?
I went with Witch Sight, because I could. I thought it was cool.
Alright, why Witch Sight? That's the true form.
You can see the true form of any shapeshifter creature concealed by illusion or transmutation magic when the creature is within 30 feet of you and within line of sight.
Okay, well, this makes sense, because if you're used to dealing with Yanti, you're going to deal with a lot of tricksters and a lot of people who are trying to pull one on you and stuff like that. So I can see why Witch Sight would benefit this character, just to protect themselves.
I don't know why, but as you were talking, I imagined in the Yanti is like manipulative sales, so every Yanti is just trying to like...
Oh, they use car salesmen?
Yeah, basically.
Like the father from Matilda is a Yanti?
Oh my god, yeah. They're basically just car salesmen. Oh, come on, this is totally not like cast minor illusion to get rid of like big gashes in the car. Once they drive off, they realize,
yeah. All right, and then you go with Bond of the Talisman. That just makes your talisman better, right?
Yeah, basically.
And then
I went with Beach Speech. Because Yantis have this innate ability where they can speak with animals, but it can only be snakes. But I wanted to give this character a bigger range of speaking with other animals, so they can speak with animals without trimming his muscle up at will.
Oh, okay.
A Mask of Many Faces I thought would fit this character nicely, because it's a Yanti and can trick others and look into something else. So you can just cast disguise self at will without expending a spell slot. I went Agonizing Blast because as I'm making this character, I'm realizing, oh, there's not a lot of damage here. You should get something to give you damage.
Yeah.
And I went Ghostly Gaze as well, because it sounded cool.
Well, it's good for exploration, if you can see through things. The last one you chose was...
Otherworldly... Let me get it out.
That's the one in which you jump three times as far.
Yeah, you can cast jump on yourself at will without turning yourself out of the chair.
Well, there you go.
Yay.
Is your low charisma supposed to represent how you came from a culture without emotion?
Yeah.
Okay. At first I was confused, now I think it's genius.
Okay, so speaking of which, since your ability scores are unusual, you should probably bring those up. So why did you choose the ability scores you chose?
Well, intelligence and wisdom, part of the Yanti is that they're an enhanced version of humans, and especially purebloods are most enhanced, they're the best.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, so...
Yeah. So I thought intelligence and wisdom would probably be what they would have the best in. Charisma, because they're so emotionless. I like to think of charisma as... Well, it's supposed to be so emotionless. I like to think of charisma as you can empathize with people and talk with them. And obviously Yanti, other than, with their own kind, and others who are just as emotionless as them, they can't talk to people very well, probably. That's why they would make terrible bards.
I get what you're saying. I think because of the conflicted, thought of your character who went into this, I think they can be very charismatic. Most wants you can.
Yeah.
But because you don't want to use your abilities for evil, you don't have that charisma because you don't think that that's a good thing. So,
that's why this is a level 15 character. The ability scores, and it even has a racial bonus.
Yeah.
Of +2. So they're obviously, it wasn't going to be a problem for me to put it as the lowest where I wanted to prioritize on others. But that's why ability score is a +1. And as you get more, I think you get one more ability score. If you
drop
to level 17,
then
I might be
wrong. Yeah, you get one more.
So you can add another one to charisma.
I mean, it's a little unusual, especially for a warlock.
But I love unusual.
But I get what you're going for. You're going for someone who is not trying to be a min-maxer warlock.
Yeah.
Why did your patron choose you, or why did you choose your patron? Who is your patron?
The patron is the Kraken. Just because Kraken.
Okay, well, did you just kind of stumble upon the Kraken and now you work for the Kraken?
Kind of. I thought since the Kraken, I like snakes have tentacles. Snakes and tentacles look the same.
Yeah.
The Kraken would kind of take more of a shine to Yanti. That's just my thought process.
You're saying all octopus and snakes look the same?
No.
Huh?
I'm going to toss something at him. And it's going to hurt him.
Okay. So would you say that, like, you just happened to come across the Kraken and the Kraken just spared you?
Yeah.
And you work for you do things for the Kraken, or the Kraken thinks you're silly or whatever, and just...
The Kraken's like, oh my god, child, stop. Most of the time. Because I like the Fathomless one, because it, obviously you're closer to your Patreon than, like, with yours, with the Hexblade.
Yeah.
And, like, with Tyler's, who doesn't even, most of the time, those patrons aren't even either helping.
Yeah.
There's obviously a closer connection. Which is why I think the Kraken and, like, Zagreo would go well together. Because the Kraken's older, so it's also, like, it knows more. But it also means, like, it can understand, it knows what humans want. And it's angry at humans, sure. Probably because it's polluting and or... Yay, humans helping the sea.
Yeah.
Screw humans.
Probably not screw humans. But it also wants to, you know, help others become better. I just like the Kraken because of that. The Kraken's never supposed to have been evil. That was a myth lost translation. The Kraken was something to guard. It was never something to be evil. So, I think it would relate much more to Zagreo. Because I never thought Yonatis were supposed to be evil. I always thought that was stupid.
So basically the idea is that...
It relates.
They're both misunderstood is the idea. Okay.
They're the misunderstood best friends.
BFF forever.
That's different. Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay. So it's a very different take
on
the Yonati and a very different take on the Kraken. And a very different take on Warlock in general. So, yeah, you're obviously not shooting to be the most powerful combat, you know, monkey. The idea is, so you want to just be more of a player character.
More player character. Somebody who appears all the time.
Is yeah.
Like, let me help you real quick.
A major part of the story, at least.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything that was important in the description that stands out, or not? Standard looks like a snake.
Not really. Purebloods actually are human.
Yeah, they have legs and everything.
They have legs. Like, they might have some snake parts, but they look very much human, and you can most of the time barely tell the difference between the purebloods. That's why I wanted an actual Yanti, but we don't have that. Because I wanted to have snake parts, and I thought that would be cool. But no, you get human. It's stupid, but whatever.
Alright. Well, there you go.
This character can operate via water vehicles. Which helps with the smuggler.
Okay, so you're suggesting that this character can be on the ocean.
Yes.
Or
at least knows how to be on the ocean.
Yeah, major bodies of water, big rivers, big lakes.
It would much rather be in the water than be on the ground.
That makes sense. Wanti is from the All Those Guys to Monsters.
All Those Guys to Monsters.
And the Fathomless is from Tasha's Cold and Nerdy.
Yes.
Okay, so there we go. All right, I think that's everything, right?
Yeah. Nothing else I want to say about this character.
No.
Okay, so next time we're going to be...
in the new year.
Yeah, next time we're going to be discussing the Ranger. It's either going to be right before the new year or right after the new year, so either way.
Or on the new year.
Have yourself a wonderful new year, and welcome to 2021.
Not all right. 2020.
Yeah, I would never want to repeat 2020 again.
Jesse, you're a dumbass.
We already knew this.
Screw you, Jesse.
Shut up, Jesse. You're the worst.
Okay.
We're not recording right now anyways. We're going to cut all this out, so it's fine if I say.
Maybe we did. Why? Because...
Anyways.
Next on Batman. so I like the Awakened Mind because It,
He started doing weird stuff because the Great Old One left. And the best part about it is you can duel your lances. Sorry.
So weird.
You can though.
I thought you had to use two weapons if you were on a horse. You have to use it two-handed unless you're on a horse.
No, how the lance works is, oh yeah, you're right, it does require two. It requires two hands for a mount. Okay, you have to get a horse, but still, get a horse and get two lances.
I'm gonna learn how to ride a horse with just your feet. So you don't have to use your hands at all. And you can just go around like a crazy psychopath with lances in front of you, slamming into dragons left and right like a psycho.
Well, yeah, like if you steal the ranger's, like beast companion or the artificer's, robot.
Have your druid turn into a horse.
Or a bear.
Or a bear. Yes. Process. Continue.
Yeah, we're very off that.
Yeah, so with that crazy thought, you gotta admit, you kinda wanna see that.
I do.
Somebody draw that, please? I would love it if somebody did that.